up, guys? Welcome back to Blood, Sweat, and Gear with coaches Skip Hill, Andrew Berry, and myself, Scott McNally. Guys, all of our programming is brought to you by TrueNutrition.com. You can use our code THINK for all sorts of products, including intra-workout carbs, which might be part of our topic today. We're also brought to you by SupplementSource.ca. Great deals for Canadians, people of the North. You guys can get awesome deals on label changes, short-dated products, stuff like that. We're also brought to you by you guys, people of Patreon. Thank you very much for your support. I've been doing early releases over on Patreon, and right now there is an It's Just Bodybuilding Patreon only episode. So I hope you guys are enjoying that. So what's the topic today, Andrew? We were looking at one of our listeners. It was Justin, right? And he said, let me grab it and throw it up on the screen. He says, topic for the next show. Can each of you guys give your ideal pre, intra, and post-workout nutrition and scenario? Thanks, guys. Love the show. Skip said, I like this one.
Yeah.
Team Ken said that.
I'm not a carb guy pre-workout, so I'm protein fat. That's, I think, well known. I do get my carbs. I eat about three meals before I train, so the first two might be carbs, but the one before I train isn't. I hit my insulin, then I hit my intra. I have intra and EAAs and true electrolytes. And then post is pretty predictable. I have stayed with the same post for a long time. Team Skip protein and rice checks. So I'm down to only one or two protein drinks a day, and that has helped my distension a little bit. But I go big on my protein. I increase my protein by about 50% post-workout. So typically, like at the start of this cut phase, I was at about 120 grams. I'm OCD, so I don't do scoops. I actually weigh the powder. But 120 grams, I think that puts me at about 90, I'd have to do the math, but I think it's 90 grams of protein. And then my carbs come from rice checks, and then I get back into my regular meals. So boring, but I don't know, effective.
Let me ask you this. So what was your post again? It was the rice checks and what?
Rice checks and Team Skip protein.
Okay. So after that, now how long after the workout is that?
I'm one of those guys, I don't do the whole, I must eat this very second, especially after legs. It takes me 15, 20 minutes to get home. I probably won't eat for another 30 minutes after legs, but typically it's 15 minutes after I get home, something like that.
So about an hour.
Yeah.
And then when do you pick up, when's your next meal after that meal? Do you just go back to like every 2 to 3 hours or how does that
work? It's about an hour and a half to 2 hours. It depends on whether it's early in the week and whether I have loaded or whether it's later in the week, especially now as I'm cutting and I may be more depleted. What I will find is if I don't get, especially with insulin and intracarbs, especially with everything so balanced now, I'm not in this huge surplus like I am in the off season. I have to be very careful that meal doesn't go too long or I can get a little bit hypo.
That's what I was kind of wondering, how that all timed out.
Angry.
Okay.
Well, do you find that with the cereals in general? Especially if you take an insulin pre-workout.
Yeah. Now, I have a pretty good balance now of my insulin dose versus my intra. And you have to tweak these things. So for the listeners, I was training legs on Friday. And for me, I typically load on a Sunday and didn't load for the first probably 5 weeks, I think it was. So I'd have to be careful that I didn't start to get a little bit hypo even before I got home. But I like being a little bit hypo.
Yeah.
You start to hit and then okay, now it's time to eat. Versus I got to go to the grocery store and I got to get gas and oh crap, I'm going hypo. And then you get mad and it's not a hypo where you're going to hit the floor.
Yeah.
But it's a hypo that it just keeps digging a little bit more of a hole. You don't want to get sucked. And I always have extra with me. I always have a Ziploc bag of another large serving of EAAs and, intra carbs in case I do run low. Maybe I'm taking in more while I'm training and I just don't, measure it right. Or I don't want to run out. I don't want to run out early. If I end up, I want to do calves today or, hit with abs on a non-scheduled day, I don't want to run low.
Yeah.
Let me also ask you, so why the 90, almost 100 grams of protein post-workout? And this isn't like a challenge. I think the listeners would really gain from this.
It's something that I've done for a long time because I consider that post-training window kind of sponge time. And someone sent me a study or a couple studies only like a month or two ago and said, hey, Skip, what you've been doing? I remember doing this when we trained together and these studies back it up. Somebody posted them. I don't even know who it was.
Scott and I did a thing on it. Was it the 100 gram protein?
It may have been. It was something like
that. It was basically that there's no real limit to anabolism in that post-workout window in terms of protein intake.
Real limit up to 100 grams because that's as high as they tested.
Only because that says the limit. If they tested 150, what would we find out? If we tested
200? That's what Scott had wondered. He was like, so there's no limit? You could imagine him saying that.
The limits would be related to digestive issues with that large of a protein serving at one time.
Yeah.
I think that's what would be the limiting factor, not your body's ability to synthesize and manufacture proteins from your post-workout meal, but more so, you know.
Well, when do the systems break down?
Could you guys eat 400 grams of chicken in one meal?
Right. Well, I was even thinking I'd switch to egg whites because I stay full from all that protein powder longer than I want to.
Really?
But yeah, it does. It keeps me pretty full. It's a lot of protein powder, man. 90 grams. I mean, I think it's like 5 scoops or something like that. It's just, it's crazy.
I did Team Skip Shake right before the show started.
Nice. But I was 50. Thinking about going to like egg whites or something because I don't want to eat anything like that. Like you say, it's a lot of chicken. I don't want to eat anything like beef at that time because I'm not a big, when I'm cutting, I try to keep my fat intake, you know, relatively low unless if I'm going to add fat, I'm going to add it macadamia oil or something like that. Olive oil. I can't stand the taste of olive oil. It just makes me want to gag, but macadamia nut oil I can tolerate, things like that. So I try not to, you know, take in those heavier meats, but egg whites, could you imagine trying to eat 90 grams of protein in egg whites? I mean, you'd want to throw up. And let's
four
be fair,
cups.
I would smell, my wife would want to divorce me because I don't deal well with egg whites. No.
No, for sure.
How about you, Andrew? What's your go-to or ideal?
Yeah. I mean, I'm like Skip, where I don't completely omit carbs, but I think my pre-workout meal is my lowest carbohydrate meal.
Okay.
You know, whey protein, cream of rice, peanut butter, you know, might be 45 grams of carbs total in that meal. More so because I don't want to have any bloat. And I also feel like Skip does that those carbs you're eating right then aren't going to do a lick of anything during your actual workout. Right. And then I get to the gym. I like to take insulin and I like to use, you know, a mixture. I use our Granite product called Recovery, which has highly branched cyclic dextrin, electrolytes, essential amino acids. It's got some central in it, you know, ashwagandha and a few other cool supplements. I'm not huge on the pre-workout drinks, especially the ones that, like the stimulant ones. I really have turned away from those 5, 6, maybe even 8 years ago. Maybe like the last couple of weeks for prep, I would use one, but I just find that using stuff like that gives me more of a stomach ache going into a training session. And the very last thing I want with training is to have stomach bloat and stomach issues. So I kind of admit that kind of stuff. In terms of amounts of intra, it depends. You know, back in the day, I could do 150 grams of carbs with a good amount of insulin.
Sure.
These days, and you guys probably can attest to this, as you get older, your ability to handle that kind of stuff during training just isn't what it was. So, you know, if I can get 75 grams of an intra carb in, I'm doing pretty darn good. And then I'm
which
like,
is still a good amount. That's still a good amount of carbs. Yeah.
Is it? Yeah.
I'd say so.
I'm about 50, unless it's leg day later in the week, then I might push up to 75. So I think we're kind of in the same ballpark.
So you
what's
know what's
the
crazy?
Time frame though between your last meal and when you train?
So if I eat at 11, we're doing like our first, I would say, working set by 12:30. Usually.
That's about what I am too, about an hour and a half. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, after when you get takes 30 to 40 minutes to get to the gym because where we're coming from. And then, you know, we take, especially if we're doing legs, we're doing 15 to 20 minutes of warm-up stuff before we even get into it. And I'm not counting like calf work because we do calf work first quite often. You know, I don't count that as anything that's going to create like a systemic sympathetic effect on my body. So like that, I can do that while warming up basically. And then I like to wait some days. If it's leg days, I might wait 2 hours to eat when I get out of the gym, because we've had some killer workouts lately that just leave my whole systemic, like my neurological system just like smoked to where I don't feel the hunger even for, you know, hour and a half. So, but my post-workout meal, I do more of a solid meal. So I should say that too. If I was doing a shake and like a cream of rice or even a cereal, I would definitely be able to eat a lot sooner. But I do, right now it's just whitefish, rice, and avocado oil. I've been a big fan of avocado oil. So usually, you know, it's 230 grams of fish, usually about 400 grams of rice. I have an apple with it, and about 15 grams of avocado oil. So it's a decent, you know, decent complex meal. And again, and I should also say this, I'm doing more of a clean if it fits your macro these days, because you guys know, like when we get into our lifestyle, if you have, you know, a workout and then you're trying to do a podcast later, you know, within that time frame, I might have to go with cereal and a whey shake to get my post-workout in because just the way the schedule works out. But a typical day, I'll rely on that more solid meal somewhere in the hour to 2 hours after training.
Yeah, but you guys don't even want to know what I concocted together for my post-workout. Because I literally, I was eating right before we started, and my post-workout was, I was like, okay, well, I don't want to get too many carbs in right now. I ate carbs previously. So I had a piece of bread with some what do they call it? Like the healthy lunch meat, the stuff that doesn't have like all the nitrates in it and stuff. I literally ran to the store because I knew I wanted to have a Monster Energy drink tomorrow morning. I was like, the only time I can go is right now. If I leave now, right after my workout, I can get this. And I ran up there. I got that. I ate that half a sandwich on bread and two scoops of Team Skip. That was literally all I had. So I'm not going to say that like what I'm talking about here is podcast worthy. You know what I mean? Like I didn't prepare my pre-workout. I had eaten like a couple hours beforehand, but I can tell you this, that in my more serious days of bodybuilding, which I'd love to get back there if I could, I would say that I needed to have a good amount of carbs. And I needed to eat, I would say, time it up. Ideally, perfect would be about 1 hour before training. If I were to wait longer than that, I'd just be shot. Even without insulin, I would start going hypo in the gym. You know, after I'm done training, warming up, doing calves with Andrew, we haven't even started the workout yet. I'm like ready to leave. I'm ready to go eat food. You know.
Well, I think you told us too in the past that you would go hypo when you're working your route, delivering soda.
Oh yeah, yeah. I've always had like blood sugar meals, issues.
Like,
yeah,
yeah. And even when like we'd be getting on the show before we'd start recording, you'd start having like these trickles of sweat, and I'm like, I know what that means.
Because you called it after a while.
I'm like, you're hypo right now, aren't you? You go eat something.
You did. But I would say ideal would be in the thing that worked really good for me was sweet potato and lean beef. Lean beef had the fats, it kind of slowed everything down. Yeah. And I just felt like I got good pumps eating sweet potatoes for some reason. Maybe it was the beef and sweet potatoes. There's magic for me. And it was heavy enough that it stuck with me through the workout. Anymore, if I do an intra, it's going to be like 25 grams, honestly. Yep. And I found that honestly, like even a small amount of carbs, like 25 grams, it does enough for me to boost my recovery. I don't need to do like 50 grams of carbs or what I had done in the past, like going really high, like we've talked about before. But yeah, 25 would be about it for me right now. If I were to try to use insulin nowadays, it'd probably be like 2-3 units would be literally it. But I don't have a need for it at this time. But in the past, it would have been that big meal. And then 1 hour later, plan to be in the gym 15 minutes before training, take the insulin, start drinking my intra the minute I got there. And then probably I would do a couple scoops of protein after I was done training, just because it was going to take me an hour to drive home and I'd be getting hungry. And then, but I didn't use carbs with that because I just had carbs all through the workout. And then about an hour later, going to my next meal, which I would then do a solid food meal with whatever my macros were at the time, you know, probably 6 ounces of meat and, you know, a couple cups of rice or something like that and a veggie.
Mm-hmm. And I think you made a good point, too, that should be touched on. When you have intercarbs, that should impact your post-workout carb intake as 100%. Well. 100%. And I think a lot of people they start taking the intra then they're like, "Oh, I'm getting fat. This isn't working," because they left their post-workout carbs the same. So which one are you going to blame, the intra or the post-workout? I don't know.
Well, I like to explain, or I used to explain the whole intra thing as you're basically taking your post-workout meal and making it a digestible meal during your training. That's not mm-hmm. going to affect your parasympathetic nervous system and cause digestive, or shouldn't be causing yeah. digestive issues. And then that kind of rang the bell for a lot of people pertaining to that issue of like, I feel like I'm getting fat by doing this intra and doing my post-workout. And then we'd look at the plan and be like, well, you've consumed like 400 carbs in this like last 3 hour period. Like, yeah. of course you're getting fat, you know?
Yeah. And with my increase in protein, I'm able to cut the carbs down too, because obviously I don't need as many carbs with the added protein post-workout. It, roughly 50% above what I normally would take in. And then of course the intra as well. So mm-hmm. intra carbs.
One thing I'll say that's changed for me over the years is that I'll do this quite often where I actually won't do any intra during leg training days. Like if it's going to be a hard leg workout,
okay.
Just because I know like systemically, I just can't take it. I start to feel like the gurgles, or I'm running into the bathroom thinking I'm like dry heaving actually. And sometimes even throwing up. Whereas 10 years ago, you know, like I said, I was using upwards of 150 grams of cyclic dextrin during like a leg day or something like that. So that's definitely been a shift for me. And I just consider that like listening to my body and making decisions based off what my body can actually handle versus, no, you have to get your intra workout in. Some days I just do water. You know, if I feel like water is going to be the most advantageous thing for me, I'll just do water.
And we do something a little bit different with our intra too, in the sense that you like to drink like half of it or something pretty much out of the gate. Or 20%. Something like that. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Then it probably would be closer to the same then. For some reason, I thought that you drank maybe up to half or something like that. I'll get a good
amount. It was amount a situation where someone wanted to use intra and insulin and was training fasted. Where I said I would probably start drinking that on the way in and get about
50% of the patch. Sure. Yeah, in that case.
People, I mean, because the fear is, you know, you're waking up, you're already probably fairly low blood sugar, or as low as it's going to be at most, you know, out of the day. I would hate for someone to add insulin in and follow like a 20% protocol and get behind and then start feeling like during the workout, like, oh man, like I'm sweating, I'm feeling the cold chills. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you got to think. The intra has got to be additive to your workout. It's got to, you know, work synergistically for your workout. It's, there's no rule that says you have to use an intra to have a good workout. It should be used to improve the quality of your workouts. And if it's not, then don't use an intra.
Yeah.
And we don't use intra. I think the three of us, or not intra, I'm sorry. Three of us don't use pre-workouts, right? I can't because of NERP. Well, I could, but it would have to be without beta alanine, and a lot of these, I'd have to be very, very particular about it. The only thing I do is I do have a Monster Zero with my meal. Mm. Prior to, it's just a ritual, I guess, that I've done, and it kind of, I don't want to say it wakes me up. I could probably not do it, and I might not notice the difference, because I don't train until an hour and a half later after I have some synthetic caffeine. Probably isn't giving me a huge boost 2 hours in.
I will sometimes, but not a lot. Yeah. I might do like a half a scoop, or I just got this nootropic product from Mutant, and it's good. I liked it because I took a half a scoop of that too. And then I felt like after my workout, I did all my work, like just like plugged right in, you know? So it's kind of, it was like a pre-workout plan, I guess. But I use, I didn't mention my intra. I'll use, the MPA muscle intrusion at True Nutrition. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I could buy the EAAs themselves and use like the EAA Plus to flavor my highly rare cyclic dextrin. I think that could be great. But I just love that lemon ice flavor. Like it's my favorite. Yeah. So it's literally the reason is because I like the flavor of it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I don't love it. I use a non-stim pre-workout sometimes, but it's usually like even a half scoop of that, where it says to use two scoops. I'll use just like a little bit. It's really just water flavoring on the way to the gym. I like Cialis more than anything personally.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, what's up, guys? I have a lot of people who reach out to me on a regular basis who are trying to more effectively reach their goals. One of the biggest mistakes I see people make is that they're not getting enough protein. And there's only so much chicken breast we can eat through the day, but we can easily add a high quality protein supplement to boost those numbers up. True Nutrition has just about every protein powder you can think of, from high quality whey isolate. If you don't tolerate lactose, then you could use their beef isolate, or you could use their pea protein isolate if you don't eat animal products. They literally have everything you'd think think of. I've believed in them for like a decade before they advertised with us. And they never went out of their way to say like, hey, we want to promote our stuff through you. I literally asked them because it's a company that I believe in. And at the end of the day, I want to see you guys reach your goals as effectively as possible. So if you use our code THINK at True Nutrition, you'll get some savings, you'll help to support our programming, and you'll get some high quality products to more effectively reach your goals faster. Let's see if we have time for questions. We're going to try to just do a really short episode here. We don't have the time for a full long one, but we didn't want to leave you guys hanging. This is one that I think all of us kind of resonated with. Let's see. He says, when dieting and food is down, have you ever had experience in using a microdose protocol of semaglutide to fight off the hunger hormone? What dosing would be used for this?
I didn't know it was microdose. And the other thing is my, I'm curious what your guys' experience is, but my experience with semaglutide is that's not going to be, at first it's going to take a while before you get the appetite thing. I mean, that's why you only have to take it once a week. I mean, this is a very, very long half-life. I also didn't see the effects until like a handful, maybe not a handful, but 3 weeks in. I mean, it takes a while, and even arguably, you know, the dosing steps up from, you know, 0.25 mg to 0.5. And so you don't really start to see those until that dosing starts to go up too. I mean, it helps, but there's nothing terribly obvious or dramatic happening until those dosages do get higher. And then, you know, it's almost the higher the dosing goes and the longer you're on it, the more impressive it can be. I don't have any experience with semaglutide with someone who's a competitor, but I am curious. So I have a situation I won't get into, but because it's a long situation, but with a guy. And the main reason we're going to it, we had to pull out of the show to reset metabolism, carrying a lot of weight, and just, it's been slow going. It's just things are coming to a crawl. And went back and checked blood glucose levels, and they're fasted at, you know, in the 130s. Wow. So it's like, oh, you know, almost an
shit. Gotta fix that first.
Yeah. So we're like, okay, we need to reset everything. We need to get you off, you know, T3 clen, things like that. I don't know specifically, but there's T4, T3, and clen, and they're not at very high dosages, but got to get them off that before we put them on the semaglutide, because of course the semaglutide will increase the effectiveness of T4 and T3 by, for some people, up to like 30%. So certainly don't want to throw semaglutide on top of that. So we're pulling that out first. We almost have that out, and then we'll start the semaglutide. But I'm curious to see how he's going to respond to that. The obvious thing would be to come off growth hormone, because that can be obviously playing into blood sugar levels too. Then, of course, there's the insulin route. But we're both intrigued. We're both on the same page as someone I've worked with for a long time, and we have battled. He doesn't have a great metabolism anyway, but this is a different situation. He had a surgery on his hip, a surgery on his lower back for a fusion, things like that. So during that time, he gained a lot of weight, and we're struggling to get it off. So that's going to be my kind of case study, I guess, for someone who's far more bodybuilding related than just Gen Pop.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to be honest. I'm more skeptical of any of the drugs that have hit the market over the last couple of years because, well, I'm going to go down a small rabbit hole here, but like, I've been reading a lot of books about the pharmaceutical industry lately and about how the testing that, like, when they make claims that like these products are safe, whether it's a vaccine or it's a drug that hits the market or whatever, a lot of these companies, they bypass a lot of the phase 1, 2, and 3 clinical trials, or they do them in countries where they don't have to report the adverse effects in the same way that we do in the United States. There's a reason why a lot of these drugs, the things are tested in like Africa, for instance, because their standards are much lower than ours. And it's sad to say, but their population is obviously, you know, they're not as economically doing well as we are. And their countries will take pharmaceutical money to run these tests and to find results that are advantageous to the pharmaceutical companies. And I say that because, well, me doing the research is kind of a side thing because I'm on this kick to find out more about the pharmaceutical industry as a whole. So we'll leave it at that. But I started really thinking about this and pertaining to semaglutide with a client that was using it for contest prep, who had a very successful prep. She turned pro. It was great. But she had a lot of side effects, and we weren't using hardly any, you know, maybe a milligram a week or something like that.
What kind of sides was she getting?
Yeah, I'm curious as well.
Well, you mentioned the side effects related to T3, T4. That was a big one, like massive. And we weren't using T3 with this prep. Massive, like she went to the hospital for massive heart issues to where they gave her a monitor and tested, you know, tachycardia and all that kind of stuff.
So the heart rate, the resting heart rate was through the roof. Yeah.
Through the roof, like through the roof for her, you know? And then the digestive issues, you know, that people get, you know, that accompany, you know, the gastric emptying and constipation, that kind of stuff. I'm trying to remember the other sides, but it was enough to make me really say, okay, this isn't just a magic compound that we can use to get through sticking points or, you know, and I also looking at it as a whole, you know, they're really if they're pushing this stuff on kids, because our kids in America are like 70% overweight and 60% or 50% obese at this point, we're trying to treat a problem that we're trying to take the easy fix, the band-aid approach, you know, versus like, hey, you know, exercise more, take vitamin D, take all the things that we know, you know, this could be like a 2-hour long speech for me. So I'll that I'm not like as convinced that semaglutide is a net positive for our demographic right now.
When you say
our demographic, do you mean our demographic in bodybuilding or just in our, like our society itself?
I'm saying specifically our, like our clients, whether they're Gen Pop or they're
contest. And that's what I'm wondering. That's what I'm wondering too.
I got to say something about this.
If someone is 400 pounds, a female is 400 pounds, and this could extend her life.
Yeah.
I absolutely, because she's going to lose 150 pounds off of it. I think that's the application because she was going to die young anyway. Right.
Yeah.
But for people like that we work with that, let's say our Gen Pop people want to lose 20, 25 pounds. Well, look, we can do that. It's going to take a year, maybe 2 years for a lot of you because we're going to have to start and stop and pull back at times, but we can do that. You know, contest prep people, we could do it in 15 to 20 weeks because you're motivated and we just got to work harder. But yeah, that's kind of where I'm standing on that.
I think there's a middle ground, and I think that's what you're kind of getting more toward, Andrew, when you're talking about like the extremely obese person.
Sure.
I think there's a middle ground. I do think that it's being like overused like crazy, you know? Victoria's talked about using it. She had been prescribed liraglutide, which is fast acting, which if this person, and I'm not saying that it's a good idea to add something in, but if you wanted something to hit right on that spot, it's liraglutide's a daily administration, I'll say.
I was not aware of that.
Yeah, yeah. And she had been prescribed that in Canada since like 2018, but she was prescribed it for PCOS, the way that we'll use like...
Gotcha.
What do you call it? Metformin. You know, for the same type of thing. So I think it can be beneficial for situations like that. Since she's had so much experience with it, she's gotten really good with understanding how to supplement to support that digestive stuff. Mm-hmm. But I think it's tricky. And I think like, you know, like it, here's the thing in bodybuilding, we're eating, like you already have a chance. All right. If you're dealing with a high level female competitor, she already has a good chance of getting constipated and having issues with digestion, even without that stuff in there. Right. So I think it's tricky to add that in. I would say that when we start talking about using it for bodybuilding, I do think there's benefits. I do think it's middle ground. I could say so much more. It's interesting because now I'm seeing her dad started using it. He started using semaglutide for fat loss. And he's getting shamed now, which is interesting. Yeah. He's getting shamed by people who are like, oh, well, you know, once you stop taking it, it's all going to come back.
And they call them Ozempians. Those are the people who are taking it. And, you know, because you're weak. And you can, it's like a libtard type of negative. It's a pejorative. Yeah. It's just because we make up, nasty.
It's new words. I could look like you if I took the same drugs you took.
Wow. Okay.
That's exactly what it is.
So now, we don't want to
agree with you. Go ahead.
No,
I
was going to say, so that said, you know, I don't want to sound like that, but I do think that there is something to be said about enduring the suck when it comes to bodybuilding and learning how to get through it the way we always have. I do think that it's not as simple. Like, I mean, Andrew, you're a high level coach. You've been doing this for a long time. You've worked with a lot of people and you ran into an issue with this particular lady, you know, and it could happen to many others. I wouldn't just like, hey, I'm hungry and it's really tough, so I'm going to just throw this in. And I think that's the problem that we're running into is a lot of people are just like, oh, hey, I'll just take this, you know?
Let me back up 1 second because also this wasn't a compound that I sought out for her to take. Like I was having to work with a hormone replacement company to get her Anavar and to get some TRT replacement.
Yeah.
And they pushed it on her.
Of course they did.
It's a big moneymaker right now. Sure. It's like I drive by the road. There's signs, these big blow up signs that say semaglutide here, tirzepatide here, or however you say it here, sold here. Like, you know, $100 a month for injections, stuff like that.
Yeah. And look at society. I mean, society is going to jump all over it because they're all talking amongst themselves and it's working for the average person because all they're doing is eating less. Now, the study that bothered me was that they were saying that an extensive study shows that 40% of the weight loss is actually muscle tissue.
That's the thing.
When I started to apply, which makes sense because they're still eating like shit. They're just eating less.
Right.
Because gastric emptying. It's like that meal that you ate will just slowly digest. It's so much longer. Of course, you're not going to have blood sugar levels because gastric emptying is, you know, it's being slow too. So they're talking amongst themselves. You don't have to do anything different. You can still have your drinks and they lose, you know, 30 pounds, 40 pounds, whatever over the long term. My argument, and this is why I'm intrigued, and my situation I think is a little bit different with my client too, because of the higher blood sugar levels. Yes, it could be that pulled them off the growth hormone, but the growth hormone dosing isn't really all that high. That would be pulled first if there wasn't this option and we weren't on the same page to try it. But he's also been in a deficit for a while. His loading has been incredibly clean. I mean, we're talking like a poke bowl once a week. I mean, we're not talking anything off the, and his carbs are very low. So outside of the growth hormone, there should be no elevated blood sugar levels like that. And with the GH dosing, it arguably still shouldn't be that high anyway. So we're going to give it a shot and we're going to see. My thing is with the weight, with the muscle loss, I think that's coming from the study is coming from the Gen Pop population who is not training, is certainly not on any type of gear.
They're just not eating.
Because I've seen my clients who train and they're not on gear and they're not having any type of muscle loss.
Yeah.
They're gaining, they're progressing. They may not be progressing like they would be if they were on gear and not using semaglutide, but the progression is still there. And, you know, you guys know the symptom. It's kind of ironic that I was probably talking to you guys about my one client who had the higher heart rate issues. And then you run into that with your with your client. It's like, and that has to be watched. And in this industry, it can be overlooked or people cannot know that something as small as a small T4 dose that you might be on or you might add to the semaglutide could create resting HR problems and they can be big.
Yep.
It's good. It's good stuff, guys. What about before we left, because I know we got to keep it short, we didn't cover one aspect. Andrew, you had a really, I think, ingenious thought. We got on the last question, the question about DECA causing issues for people. Guy said that every time you take this shot with DECA in it, you'd throw up. We got somebody else, Matt Blevins. He said that he'd get extremely nauseous from it. And he said he, whether it was DECA, NPP, no matter what, had these problems.
And I'm impressed by this. This is really, which doesn't mean you're not smart. You're clearly smart. But I just literally went, oh, shit, he's right. Like, it didn't even occur to me.
Try so living kill with us me with all your, these gems. Kill us with just your pop out all the time. No, but I mean, so keep in mind, like, I'm not saying I've seen research on this. I'm not saying this is a fact. I'm saying just thinking about the problem and thinking a little bit outside the box. Okay. Because these guys are saying, Matt and the other person who asked the question were saying that basically all nandrolone derivatives are causing this issue of making them feel like they have to throw up or they want to vomit. They feel sick. Right. Yeah. So I start thinking, okay, there probably is a relationship with some people with nandrolones in particular, increasing eicosanoid and prostaglandins to the point where it is causing reverse peristalsis in terms of making them throw up, basically. And then, you know, Skip, you brought up the point of Esseclin. And why don't you describe that real quick?
Well, Esseclin just basically, I put it in the category of SEO because it's not like oil. Oil just volumizes like synthol, but Esseclin actually is used to create, it's like the same look you're after, but it's to create inflammation. And with inflammation comes prostaglandins. That's why when you have a headache, you have inflammation, you have a higher level of prostaglandins. And we take ibuprofen to decrease prostaglandins, and then you don't have a headache anymore. So if it's a prostaglandin issue with the DECA, then you have to wonder, and again, I have no idea, but I mean, logically, I'm thinking, take ibuprofen and see if that doesn't knock down that sickness issue. But Esseclin, and I should be clear on this, Esseclin, the reason that I brought that up too is one of the side effects for a lot of people with Esseclin is it would make you almost violently want to throw up, or your abdominal muscles contract, your stomach contract to try to, like, you need to throw up.
Huh.
So
and let me say though, I never knew that Esseclin's like an instantaneous drug, yes, right? Whereas NPP and it's not instantaneous. It's a shorter ester. Right. You got different esters, but nandrolones in general are longer lasting drugs than say Esseclin. So it would make sense that you wouldn't see that side effect from the nandrolones until, like these guys are describing, a couple days later. And if they're taking it, you know, 2 to 3 doses of it a week, they probably get to the point where they're always kind of feeling nauseous, especially when they eat a meal, maybe a higher protein meal, they start to feel that contraction, like, and even just it can affect you mentally to where you start to gag even if you're not eating. So,
And there are going to be those spikes. So like 48 hours, the guy said 48 hours after is when he would feel it. So boom, you know, 2 days later after that DECA administration, there you go.
Yep. And we talk about maybe throwing NSAIDs in. I mean, we don't like to add a compound to counteract the side effect of a compound, right?
Right.
Because next thing you know, you're taking A through Z of everything and you have all these other side effects you're managing. It's something you could try, but then again, you also want to worry about your stomach lining and you want to worry about your liver health. So the easier thing,
but it would tell them what it was, because if they did respond to it, then at least you would know, oh man, Andrew's smarter than hell because he gets a prostaglandin. And Skip's dumbass sat there and didn't have any idea.
Hey, Scott too.
that was pretty good.
Yeah,
that very low wattage bulb came out above my head, and I was like, ooh, Andrew.
You know, and it's one of those things, too, that, like, I mean, at the end of the day, we don't need every compound. We don't need to use every compound, right? So if this is the case, like, you know, it'd be, like you said, great to know, taking the Advil, figuring it out. But at the same time, let's use something that doesn't cause this to begin with, you know?
Yeah.
But try it again for my vanity.
Yeah. We're at a trial here. Yeah.
It's a learning. It's just one more thing that you would know versus, let's say it doesn't work. And then I go back to, okay, if it doesn't work, then maybe it's what we were talking about, the solvent and or the carrier, you know.
Also, you could be doing some groundbreaking work of things that are not known in this industry. Because, like, I'm sure there's two guys in our podcast that just recognize that this is a side effect. There's probably hundreds, if not thousands, of guys that have this side effect when they're running nandrolones, and they never wondered why. Their coach just keeps telling them to take it. So, like, well, I guess I just got to suffer through it, you know?
Right.
Oh, God. Even if we didn't know what we're doing, I wouldn't tell somebody to keep taking it if they're throwing up. So fire that coach if he's telling you to keep taking
gains.
Gains.
Oh, I'm gonna throw up. You're gonna throw up. But are you gonna lose your gains, bro? It's all about the gains with a Z. Do we have time for my word, or do we not?
Of course, we always have time.
The word for this show is soliloquize.
You did this one before, didn't you?
You did this.
I don't think so. I did.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh man. Okay. Then I gotta go back, because would you use soliloquize? You could, in a sentence. Then let's go with. Oh man, you put me on the spot. Let's go. Do you have one, Andrew? Can you help me? Because
this is Skip's word of the day.
I know, but I got caught because I had a list, and I thought to myself, I'm like, I should be making a list of the words that I use. Okay, I'll tell you what. I'm going to use insipid, and I'll tell you why. Okay.
You can usually say it.
You guys know what trite. trite means, right? It's just a boring, not thought out, regurgitated thought. It's like, especially politically, when you're arguing online, people say things. It's like a catchphrase or something that might be cliche. Okay, insipid, because I just love adjectives. They're my favorite of all the words I have. Most of them are adjectives. Anyway, insipid. It's just a bland, thoughtless. It's very close to trite, but it's a bland, thoughtless. You're bringing comment that brings nothing to the. It's not imaginative. It's not. It's nothing. It's just insipid. It really came from food, like bland tasting food. The soup, you know, it was insipid. The meal was insipid, or the soup tasted insipid, and then it went to using it more to explain someone's personality, their demeanor, or comments that they might make.
Insipid. Use it in a sentence before we go.
A comment would be insipid. It's an adjective, so it would be.
That was an insipid comment.
Yeah. Okay. That's the best
bland,
one. I can't.
Bland, yeah, tasteless, bland, and insipid soup, as you said. Yeah.
Not very imaginative, boring.
This is an insipid podcast.
Yeah, right.
That's what our listener.
When I try to use the same word again, I did not know.
That's what our listeners say to us.
I'm gonna make a list now. I'm gonna make a list to make sure I don't do that again. Right. I got busted.
All right, we got to run, guys. Thanks for tuning in, and we will be back with more. Leave us questions for the next episode. Go to teamskip.com. You can reach out to Skip there. Bodyberry.com. You can reach out to Andrew there. McNallyDiets@gmail.com. You can email me over there. And, of course, TrueNutrition.com. You can get your Team Skip protein over there, as well as the MPA Muscle Nutrition. Use our code THINK for additional savings. SupplementSource.ca. Great deals for Canadians. And thank you to everybody from Patreon. Guys, we'll see you soon.